Want to make a difference in your community but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
There we go. And we're live. Welcome to the Path Forward, the round table. Tonight we got a full house. And I think we're going to start tonight. We're going to talk through the situation with gold and silver. I touched on it briefly on my Substack live chat last night and on Tuesday, you know, when I wasn't ranting about Marine Corps colonels over total cucks. But let's start with, so we're seeing a couple of things going on in the market, and I didn't have a chance to catch up with Luongo today. I reached out to him to try and get some heads up, but give you the synopsis of conversation with him for the last couple of days. And I was really trying to get a hold of Vince Lance today because he's a gold and silver guy. But short answer is we're seeing the city of London, well, the bankers in London, as well as the Trump administration, has figured out that letting gold and silver continue to rise will ultimately hurt the dollar. So we're seeing a pullback and a yin and yang in the market right now. And I think that's going to continue for some time. I don't see that slowing down anytime soon. And I'll just start there and tee it up, let you guys go. Who wants to go first?
You can throw the new guy in the fire. They're going to use every tool, trick, and trade that they have to try and tamp it down, because it's their very survival and the trust factor that they need to try to hold on to. So once trust is lost with these guys, it collapses the whole system.
Yeah, and I can't help but think that the contract market versus the physical market is probably a 4-to-1 ratio. So they there's no way they can make physical delivery on all the contracts they've sold. So I anticipate that this is going to, I hate to say it, man. As much as I'd like to see the U.S. come out of this and decouple from the city of London, I'd still like to see the city of London collapse, especially the banking aspects of it.
You have to think how this is going to hyper-accelerate if they find that there isn't enough physical silver to fund those paper contracts. Because it isn't just the United States. Who buys gold and silver in bulk just as a normal part of their savings plan? It's the Southeast Asia or the Asian APAC regions, the Chinese, the Russians even. The Indians, they buy a lot of gold, individual citizens. And if they see that this is the time to make the move, they're going to do it. For my birthday, my old command sergeant major sent me this 1921 Liberty Head silver dollar. He said, "Trooper, the silver is going to hit $55 an ounce, and you're going to turn 55. So you put this in your pocket." And it was very generous and kind of him. But it's amazing what people will do for these little bits of metal. And initially when I got into silver, it was just to get silver rounds like this to put in my 55 gallon long-term water storage. It was just an industrial metal, had a purpose. But the other part of it, when we were trading these, like Steve, you said you started buying silver at 14 bucks an ounce. I remember when it went over 14 and I went, man, that's a lot of money, for silver. That even the half dollars now are starting to get out of the range of common trade. you know, the secondary market. So I think that what we're going to see now is a lot of those mercury head dimes and the smaller denominations are probably what, you know, what to buy now, you know, pre-64 quarters and things like that. It is pretty interesting that we're at these loggerheads now. We're at this juxtaposition where they're pushing the central bank digital currency. I've always said if they take away paper and coin, you know, $1, $5, $20, $50, $100 paper, and they take away coins, they take away your anonymity, meaning you become a digital slave. I don't think this could happen at a better time, in spite of all the pain that a lot of us are going to suffer, where the world is starting to see now that the currency system itself is bullshit. And there's going to be a run on gold and silver because they realize they don't have enough of it. And at the same time, these governments are still pushing their central bank digital currency agendas. And people aren't, the curtain has been pulled off. There's no more facade now. They realize that money's worthless, realize that the only money that isn't worthless is the money you can hold in your hand. And regardless of what happens with this gold and silver run, I'm hoping that the rest of the planet wakes up and goes, you know what? If you can't even manage the currency that you already sold us, the fiat system on, there's no way we're going to support this digital version of it. So that's, I think, what the next step of evolution is. You know, regardless of what the consequences are of this metal, this is going to hopefully drive a death blow into the central bank digital currency plan that the, you know, the world government, whoever, deep state, whoever you want to call them, whatever the plan they have, I'm hoping that, that's
Steve. Can I get a point in? I'm going to lose contact here in like 5 minutes for a second. A great interview. There was a great interview that Mike Ferris did with Andy Scheckman the other day that I listened to, and he made some excellent points. And one of those that he hinted at was, if we're going to become a producer nation again, like Trump is suggesting, they're going to have to get us, you know, to have a lower currency value to be an effective producer and seller of goods. And that by devaluing the dollar versus gold, that will allow that to happen. And he made the point that the AI progression in the world is going to make a great many, you know, technical computer tech jobs and lawyers and all kinds of other, you know, jobs obsolescent. So the only way that people are going to be able to have a job is producing things. And so he said, we have to get to be a producer economy again. I thought he had an excellent point. And he also brought up some of the points he said about Luongo. So that's all I had to add. And oh, one other thing I noticed today, you know, a lot of things, gold was back up again. I've got a good captain friend who's a very enthusiastic gold investor who sends me stuff all the time, and he's doing very, very well, and he's predicting we're headed even higher in gold, and I agree with him.
So if you're not following Promethean Action, you probably should, because Promethean Action, she posted a video, and I'll post the link in the comments. She posted a video yesterday about Peter Navarro's speech at the CFR. If you don't know what the CFR is, the Council of Foreign Relations, and it's the CFR, the Trilateral Commission, the Pilgrim Society. There's a host of others that are all still tied to the crown. And part of the conversation that goes along with that is that she's talking about Navarro went in and basically flamed the CFR, who has been, you know, tightly in the clutch of the crown for last five decades, probably last 100 years, but really since its inception. And there's a misconception that it's a Rockefeller construct. It's not. It is a construct that was created to manage both foreign policy as well as domestic policy. And a lot of this, a lot of what she talks about, and it's only 14 minutes long, so I encourage everybody to go watch it, because she talks about all the things that went under the radar this week. The Navarro speech is one. And just so you know, the CFR has dominated U.S. foreign policy for the last five decades. at least. And the Trilateral Commission comes in behind them and influences all the domestic policy and a lot of our military policy and fiscal policy to go along with that. And she talks about how Trump is decoupling the U.S. from both the City of London as well as the Crown. And I was listening to Luongo a couple days ago. That's why I reached out to him, because I had a conversation with Burlingame. It's been about a week now. And he talked about, you know, I said, why did Trump go to London? Was it about tech? And he said, no, terms of surrender. And his premise, and it's really Luongo's premise, is that the terms of surrender were offered, the king accepted, but the king, like Trump, is surrounded by people that don't have any qualms about killing him. And one of the things where Burlingame and I haven't really dug in yet is his premise is the king, that the crown must stay in order for Europe and Britain to survive. Okay, that's fair and plausible. But let's just say, for devil's advocate for just a minute, that Trump went over and did offer terms of surrender, and the king did accept those terms of surrender. The question is, what are the next steps? And then followed closely by that is the CFR speech that Navarro gave, and then the deal that we just did with Australia. So Australia sits on a huge amount of lithium, and talking about bringing production back to the U.S., we signed a deal with them where they're both going to mine and process all those raw materials. And that's significant because, you know, for the last 250 years under British rule, the Australians were basically a mercantile, let's just say a mercantile satellite of the crown. And everything came out of the ground, but nobody in Australia profited from it. Now we've signed a partnership with them to where they're not only going to profit from the raw materials they're pulling out of the ground, they're going to profit from the production as well as from the end goods that come out of that. And that to me is significant, which really does lend credence to the fact that this is a conflict between the City of London and the New York banks.
Want to make a difference in your community but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously, your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
As well as the Fed. And I think we've seen a lot of moves. And what's interesting to me is I didn't even know about the CFR speech. I saw it nowhere in social media. I saw it nowhere in the mainstream media. So it really says that they're trying to black out all coverage of what Trump's doing and focus on the negative, which I think is significant, because when you stop and look at what the narrative is right now, and this is strictly City of London, this is MI6 at their best. This is what they do. And let me go back to Charlie Kirk. I still hold the premise that the Charlie Kirk deal, that's not in Mossad. That's not how Mossad works. That's how MI6 works. And now when you put all these other pieces together, yeah, I'm starting to see a picture that does point back to the City of London and makes a lot of sense for a lot of the moves we're seeing. Because one of the other things that happened today that we haven't seen in, what, I'm going to say 20 years, at least 20 years, we haven't seen any mention of organized crime in the U.S. under any circumstances. It's been completely void from all of the mainstream media. So on top of that, today the FBI announced that they arrested some, I think it was an NBA player, a couple of retired NBA players and some NBA coaches for sports gambling, money laundering, racketeering, you name it. All of that plays into the persona and the information that we see about sports, about the persona about these teams. But more importantly, it shows that there's an active fight going on to wrestle away the narrative from the mainstream. And it's all tied into this is the way I see it. And if you guys think I'm off base, let me know. But I'm just trying to give you a summation of what I've seen just in the last 48 hours from all the moves being made. So I'll just stop there.
I think you're looking True. At circuses and distraction.
Yeah, I agree. Keep going, because I know where you're going with that.
So essentially, it's you've gotten to the point with the mainstream media that they're fed a narrative. So CIA sets the talking points. You have to go push this out there. And, hey, don't look at that. Look over here. And then you get the cancel culture of everything. Like where you'll get throttled on X. I just jumped on X at Flake Fighter, finally. Sorry, been fighting that for a while. But it's one where they're going to try their best to control the narrative. Look over here. Don't look at exactly what we're doing. And that's how they've been getting away with this for years and years. But people are onto them. And the more we can bring the light and show people what these folks have been doing, the more pissed off the general American, and it's finally going to get them off the couch to go and do something. Instead of bitching about it, they're actually going to get up and move.
Yeah, I agree. Let's see. Hey, Colonel Piper's here. Hey, Colonel Piper.
Good evening, gentlemen.
So I don't know if you've been tracking on the conversation or if you just walked in from waxing your cat, but
No. I annoy my cat with a fork, so I don't wax him.
So we're talking about the City of London and Scott was talking
the evil
about
center of Europe. Nice.
Yeah, so she was talking about the distraction and that's exactly what it is. It's disruptive operations.
Yeah, I wonder how much people actually know or understand about the City of London and the fact that it is not the English City of London. It's the usury black Praetorian city that's located in London.
Well, so a lot of people don't understand the relationship between the crown and the City of London and how it's changed. And, I think it's very interesting that we're seeing this fight right now. And the other thing that I think is interesting, when I look at this from influencing operations, they've completely stopped influencing. I mean, completely. Now they're on to predictive programming. In fact, there's a new movie that's coming out. I think it's already out on Netflix. One second, I'll look it up. But it's along the genre of Civil War. And they've switched away from doing influencing to now it's all disruptive operations, like the Antifa conversation. And one thing that I didn't really pay attention to was that Antifa was being funded by sources and NGOs outside of the UK. And, somebody brought that to my attention yesterday, I think. It was after the show last night. And I hadn't even considered that. But given the, all the things I've been able to catch up on today, I'm starting to see. Yeah, but what's interesting is when you do influencing operations, right, you plan for an extended period of time. And if for those of you who haven't listened to me before and talked about this, intelligence drives operations, right? One of my issues with the whole Q crowd and that whole Pied Piper thing is twofold. And the first one is intelligence. Your intelligence officer speaks in plain English, right? You don't show up at a, you know, if my S2, my intelligence officer showed up at my battalion briefing and had a bunch of things I had to decode, he would have had 3 rounds in the chest and 8 rounds in the head just to be sure. And I would have got somebody else and said, speak plain English. And one of the things you do with intelligence is you're trying to identify and lay out the enemy's disposition, their order of battle, the way their forces are arrayed, the way they're going to move, and what we call most likely and most dangerous courses of action. And you do the same thing for information, but you plan for intended and unintended and first and second and third order effects, meaning you could send a bunch of information out and hit multiple demographics with that information, but you may not touch all those, it may not land with all of those different demographics. So just like in marketing, you try and put together transition operations so you can transition the narratives to something else to keep people and push them in a path. And what I'm seeing right now is and I don't want to call it desperation. Maybe you guys will call it desperation. But what I'm seeing is a disjointed, like a shotgun effort to see what sticks with the public, because it seems like everything else they've tried hasn't worked. And I don't know, call me crazy, but I'm seeing a difference in just the overall message patterns in what they're broadcasting and what they're pushing out. I mean, they're still transhumanists, they're still satanic, they're still trans, they're still, you know, free Palestine, but it doesn't seem organized to me. Call me crazy.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
So let's pull the thread on what you're talking about, because I think people, let's reduce it to something that's a little more observable right now. And that is, they do not want you to pay attention to certain things, but they do want you to get distracted. And so in the process of trying to keep you distracted, if you get on Netflix now, which my better half and I like to do on a regular basis, you're going to get pounded with, oh, you know, download this gambling app. Oh, watch your favorite sports and use the gambling app. And, you know, this is where your attention should be. And, you know, here's the games that are going to be this week. Watch the games. Watch the games. Don't watch what your government's doing. Watch the games. And people will. I mean, just recently, and I can't remember who put the little meme together that says, get rid of the man cave and bring back the study. I passed that around to as many people as I could, because it's dead on target. It's like, stop. Turn the damn boob tube off. Stop being succumbed to the games and start watching what's going on with you and your family and your country and your... And what Influence Ops is going to do is it's going to create a message stream. And then what it's going to do is it's going to find those influencers. And there was a video out that showed that Netanyahu had brought in, and I can't remember how many, it was like 18 or 25 big youth influencers. Flew them to Israel. Gave them an all expenses paid, happy vacation there. And he met with them and said, I need you out there telling the story. And then that way, no matter where you turn to look for an answer, you're getting the same story. It was really obvious during COVID when somebody would say something on the news and you could literally flip the channel and get the same sentence. over and over and over and over again. And some people put a couple of the montages together to prove to people, you do realize that you are being fed a story. And here's the story. And here.
Want to make a difference in your community, but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
Here's the proof. No matter where you turn, it's the exact same sentence, word for word, in the same order. That is influence operations. The more you hear it, the more you will believe it. The more you hear it, the more you understand that, oh, okay, they're saying the same thing over here. I get it. Okay, this is a trustworthy message. Is it? Did you research it on your own? Or are you just taking the pill every time they hand it to you? Influence ops is designed to brainwash. Influence ops is designed to exactly what Steve said, and that is influence your leaning in a direction or your attention in a direction. Don't look at the right hand. Don't look there. Don't look at what's happening in the city of London. Don't look at what's happening in Ireland. Don't look at what's happening in Venezuela. No, no, no. We have other things we want you to watch. Watch this. Watch this. Come look at this. A lot of it is headlines. There's no way you're going to read everything, but you get hit with the headlines, the headlines, the headlines, the headlines. And the more the headlines are nudging you, and I think that was the name of the group during the whole lockdown. And I think it was called the Nudge Unit, right? It nudges you in the direction. No, no, no. Don't look here. Look over there. The infamous quote from the first Star Wars, right? These are not the droids you're interested in. Go look somewhere else.
Well, that's influencing at its best, right? You know, and I thought that the whole, you know, the Alt-Reich, we must counter the Alt-Reich. Great language, right? So, what they do is they try and they do three things, right? The first one is, you try and dehumanize your enemy. Now, that's Netanyahu dehumanizing anybody that questions the narrative. Then you saturate them. You saturate the airwaves in every format that you can saturate it with the message you want people to believe. And you just keep repeating the lie until they believe it. And it's worked time and time again. And then you distract them away from the things you're really doing by giving them enough drama, because people love drama. I mean, let's face it, they love drama. And eat it up. They gobble it up. It's amazing to watch. And the first time that I was told about it, I really didn't believe it. And then I watched Geraldo Rivera during the 2025 or the 2005 parliamentary elections when he was in Baghdad. And, you know, I had done a lot of planning for the elections. I mean, not as much as my counterpart, but I everything he was saying was bullshit. Like, I was sitting there watching this, and I looked over at the general, and I'm like, this is all horse shit. He's like, the public's eating it up. Look at his ratings. And literally, he had like a 3% market share. You saw the numbers going up because we were watching it through one of the feeds. So you could see how many people were actually tuned in. It was amazing. The people just love the drama. And that's how they get you every time. They suck you into some big, you know, contrived drama. I don't know, like Epstein or, you know, the OJ trial. What was going on during the OJ trial? I mean,
Yeah.
Man, they're exceptional at it. Scott, I see you're at home. Are you all wired in? Yeah, you're muted.
They yep, built an industry on it called reality TV, where it's all about drama. And everything has to be drama laden to even get on the air. And that's, you just look at the whole Housewife series. I'm sorry, I'm married. She'll throw it on. I'm just like, fuck me running. Really? could we do something functional? No, we're going to watch the Housewives of Orange County or the Housewives of Miami. I know that lady. That's great. I know that was one of your friends. Okay, awesome. But yeah, it value add zero.
Yeah, but it proves the point, right? The point is that, you know, you can definitively see the public drawn into it, right? And they know that. They know how to play the public. And I say this all the time. It's worth repeating. Trump's an entertainer. Trump has surrounded himself with people from the entertainment industry. So he knows beyond a shadow of a doubt how to capture the public's attention. I mean, look at his posts on Friday. Friday, he drops some tack nuke in the market. Everybody responds to it over the weekend. And on Monday, he retracts it or he does something else. I mean, he did the same thing in the 2016 election. If you go back and watch the 2016 election, he completely changed the rules for how an election was run. And he did it by tweeting. Literally, he would release a tweet on Monday and it would be the focus of the news cycle for the next 5 days. And then he just ride through the weekend, drop another one the following Monday. He completely owned the market for the entire election cycle. Like Jeb Bush was a perfect example. Could not function outside of the normal, you know, script for running a campaign. And
a keyword of low energy Jeb, and he was destroyed. Yeah. Little Marco, he was destroyed. Hillary, lock her up. She's destroyed.
I mean, brilliant when you think about it, right? Because it's he knows exactly that. My point of saying that is he knows exactly how to play the market, right? The whole kayfabe thing. And you gotta give him credit where credit's due, because he's still doing it today. And he still does it. He's so effective at it that I wished I would have had some of these tactics back in 04 and 05. Because, you know, where he really excels, and this is the part that I don't think people really appreciate about his style, is that everything in the Arab world is done face to face, right? All of their conversations are done face to face. All of their interactions are face to face. And we really didn't have a medium to be face to face, but they always supplemented everything else with the internet, what they saw on the internet. And Trump has basically amplified that interaction through tweeting and through Truth Social. And now he reaches, and think about it this way. How many times do you talk about Trump or something Trump's done or some issue that Trump has or that the left has with Trump in just a casual conversation? He's revolutionized the way the whole landscape of media operates in less than 6 years. And it's been highly effective. But that said, let's go back to the City of London. I think that's part of the reason why we're seeing the scattered approach that we're seeing, because Trump has disrupted their information game to the point where they don't have a lot of resources left, which I don't know. I'm throwing it out there because that's how I see it. Call me crazy. And Troop, I know you got an opinion on this. Same with you, Spud.
Well, I was just going to kind of throw in there what Colonel Piper was saying and regards to the Israel narrative when that video came out with Netanyahu, with those influence, that spread like wildfire. And I actually have more enjoyment looking at the comments, and you're seeing what really real people out there are saying, and they're not buying into the, at least through the influencers and the posts that I'm following and the folks that the stuff that gets injected in there, it's not working out to the way that he wanted it. The big joke, if it's not true, is the $7,000 per post or per, you know, level of influence that you throw out there for Israel. There's a woman, Mexican gal, who's running for Congress out in Texas, and her name's Valentina Gomez or Gonzalez. I can't recall. But I used to follow her because she was very just like, you know, guns on the ad, go get the pedophiles, you know, knock them down, drag them out. And she just went to Israel and is pushing this whole Israel narrative. And all the people, or majority of the people that were following her, have pretty much jumped ship. And now there's an AIPAC connection and everything. So I think, you know, yeah, the influence is there, but, you know, the people that have become awake have become more awake, and it's spreading. And of course, a lot of the major influencers who weren't brought into that fold are fighting hard against it.
Did anybody see when Zelensky was at the White House last time?
And yeah,
Hegseth wore a tie with the Russian flag colors. And then another thing, Alexander Dugin had a really good thing the other day where he discussed Trump's behavior. And Dugin made a great point of how Trump is using the kefabi. He talked about the tomahawk issue, and, you know, Trump brought out the tomahawk issue, and all of us were like, what the hell, Trump, are you an idiot? You know, and then, but what happened was he used it to humiliate Zelensky at the White House. On the other hand, if you look at the actions he takes, the actions have been all towards Venezuela. That's where all the actual hard action has been, is regarding Venezuela and things in South America, which I think shows that we're reinforcing, renewing the Monroe Doctrine, and we're shoring up our stuff here in the U.S., in the Western Hemisphere. And I think the Dugin one was an excellent thing, and it encapsulated a lot of what you...
Want to make a difference in your community but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
You were saying just a little bit ago, Steve.
I think... I got a couple of thoughts on that. So we should switch to Venezuela because there's a lot to talk about there. We got an air guy here that I was. So Scott, I'm going to throw this in your lap because, you know, when we're talking about a fortified target where it's a hostile air environment, we don't have forces on the ground, we're going to prosecute an air war, which we always do. Chances are we're going to lead with air, right? And we're not going to put vulnerable assets in there. But I think right now what we're seeing with Venezuela is we're seeing soft power versus hard power. I think these attacks on these boats, I think, A, they're legitimate targets. I don't think they're fishing vessels from Trinidad. I think these are legitimate targets that are a part of the cartels. And let's just say, for devil's advocate's sake, that we are going to move in and conduct regime change there. I'm just going to open it up. How do you think it'll play out? I've got my opinion, but I'm going to wait for you guys. And there's a lot of different ways it could go.
There's proof that they can associate the current president with Dominion software and thereby establish a case that his software and control of our election caused the 2020 failure. Now, whether that drives regime change or just gives Trump this itching burrow under his saddle where he just can't let go of it.
Sorry, I think the key, though, is the actions. You know, where are we taking actions? All the concrete military actions we're doing are in our own hemisphere. That's what I see.
I'll go. So I was looking at this a few months ago as far as Venezuela goes, and the first thing we're going to do is wipe out their major airport that they have. Simon Bolivar International Airport, the thing's massive if you look at it on a map. The other thing that we have to realize is that our friends that we have in Brazil are just south of Venezuela, but Michael Yan has been reporting on for years and years and years. We've had a problem in Central America and the Panama. I did a threat assessment a couple of years ago that they attacked me for on Panama because we weren't allowed to talk about it at the time. But the big issue is that the Russians and the Chinese have been setting up shop there, surveillance. They're interceding into local governments. And if we don't act now, we're going to have a major problem. Imagine if you had a full service China and Russia naval air station, I'll say, in Venezuela. Like just visualize that for a moment, because it's certainly possible. And they, you know, that's a straight shot on the east side of the Panama Canal all the way up to the Gulf of America. And you have Cuba sitting, you know, right there, kind of semi-adjacent to that. So we're going to totally topple the Venezuelan government, and we're going to do it by leveraging the good relationships that we have with Paraguay, Bolivia. We have French Guinea in there. That's an EU country. They can't afford to lose their beachhead, their presence there. So Venezuela's... Go ahead.
What else is in French Guiana? What else is there?
The major, the satellite, yeah, the disc, I don't remember the name of it, but their big earth, ground earth station thing.
There's a launch site there too. There's a lot of launch sites there. So
there is,
you know, and it's right on the equator. So, yeah. Go ahead.
Oh, in the middle of it, though, you got to think about it strategically. So we have a lot of capability with drones and launch systems and the ability to hide a lot of that stuff. And the perfect place to hide that is in, Guinea. Like, the whole thing is a gigantic forest. And then in the middle of it, you have the Sinimary River estuary is what I'll call it. And you can hide an unbelievable amount of shit in there. And so, when we're talking rockets that only need to travel, like, what, a maximum of 1,000 miles, less than that. If you go from the top of Venezuela to the bottom tip where it dips into Brazil, that's only like 660 miles. And, I mean, that's like fighter jet, striking distance if you have the right refueling support. So Venezuela is in a... not in a position without drawing Russia and China, into a war. They're not in a position really to do anything but saber rattle, especially since they're surrounded by countries that rely heavily on the U.S. imports, a lot of which we're friendly with, all the way around, Colombia, Peru, Bolivia, Paraguay, they're all able to be controlled. And we not only do we have to control Venezuela, but we have to control Colombia too. Because if we allow Colombia to fall under the control of the Chinese and the Russians, we're going to lose the Panama Canal. There's going to be no way that we can go against them. And I don't remember, it's like 23 or 45 million people. I don't remember which number it is for Colombia, but they don't have a small army. And since like most of those countries in South America, you have a really concentrated kind of civilian population, and then you have a whole lot of hill country. So you're not going to be able to prosecute a war in those regions inside the country without harming a lot of civilians. And we don't operate IDF style where we don't give a shit. So what we're going to do is we're going to have a lot of economic influence. I read a cool fact today. I wrote it down. We export $3 billion into Paraguay a year. Like, they buy $3 billion worth of shit from us, and we only buy like $360 billion worth of stuff from them. But if you look at if you go to the CIA's website and you look at what Paraguay has, they have a lot of minerals, and so does Bolivia, things that we need, like gold, silver, lithium. They're on the T3G list, tin, titanium, tungsten, and gold. That was a big thing for a while. We have to evaluate, where we get those raw materials from, where the smelters are, where the end products flow out to in the market, and how to track that supply chain to go after like child blood diamond type of mining operations. So the entire southern landmass of Venezuela is compromised, and we're not going to have to exert a whole lot of pressure in our friendly partners in the region to probably fund their own militaries and modernize their own militaries to fight a somewhat proxy war if we have to go there with Venezuela. But we could essentially cut them off if we blockade Panama, we blockade their northern coast, and then we start moving in from our friendly countries in the south. So they're going to go down. But the question is, who are we going to replace the leadership with? And it's going to probably be some other zealot, faux communist person that can be controlled. And then we're going to send them a bunch of free shit. Everybody was mad because Trump sent a couple billion dollars to Brazil or whoever, somewhere in South America.
Argentina
pissed off the beef farmers. That the original projection of U.S. power and the deal that all of us got sold was that it's necessary to have military bases in certain parts of the world so that you can establish and maintain influence and control in those regions where you can't deploy a whole military. So you get friendly with the locals, you develop a drug dependency basically on US dollars and all of the money that we give away. And that kind of, insulates you, that insulates that country against other foreign influence. And we didn't follow that doctrine in Africa. We didn't follow that doctrine in Central and South America. And then the Chinese and the Russians came in with bags and bags of money. So now we're at critical mass. For whatever reason, we blew off all the countries in Africa, which was the dumbest thing. But if we allow the Chinese and the Russians to establish military bases on the northern coast or anywhere within South America, that is an immediate and critical threat. And that is legitimately a valid purpose to go to war if necessary. Well, I would say call to arms, because I think that war would be pretty short. But it would be a legitimate use of military power to secure that area if we're not able to do it diplomatically. And then we can go through the permutations of how we would prosecute that war. But we absolutely are not going to let Venezuela fall further into axis of evil control.
Scott, what do you think? I'm curious to get your thoughts on this one.
I think Scott fell out.
I'm back.
I was going to say too, look at the upcoming meeting between Putin and Trump in Hungary. I mean, I think that is a clear big middle finger being given to the Europeans, just along with what you were talking about, the lady with the, what was the group you mentioned with, what's his face, his speech in front of the world CFR?
Navarro.
Yes, Peter Navarro's thing. Yes, and I think that, you know, and Dugin talked about this as well in his discussion, that the meeting in Hungary, it's like kryptonite for the EU. It's kryptonite for the global elites, you know, the Davos City of London crowd. And I think that's, again, it comes back to Trump's actions that he's actually taking physically are actually what really are showing what he's doing. And we should listen less to his mouth and just more focus on his actions. That's what I think.
Scott, I called on you and you were gone, so I'm going to try again. What's your thoughts on all of this?
Yeah, no worries. Well, basically with Venezuela and any country, you need air power, so you need to control the airspace first before you do anything. And I think we can get that with Venezuela. My worry is that they've been doing enough hidden trading with Russia to have S-400 surface missile capability there. And when they start smoke checking F-35s that come off the ships, it's going to be bad news bears. So that's part of what I look at. The other part too is like you never own the ground until you're on the ground. So we could come in and we could blow everything up. We did, you know, look at Afghanistan. I kicked in the door for that. We blew everything up, took out any and everything that we could, but then it was another 20 years and we never got control of it. Fast forward 2 years later, Afghanistan, kicking the door for that. And same thing. It's like you never control it until you have boots on the ground. And then how are you going to hold it at that point? You can have all the air cover in the world and you can call me in for CAS support, close air support, and I can do everything I can, but it's one where you need to have such a dominating force on the ground to be able to hold the ground. Can we take it over in a heartbeat? Yes. Are you going to hold it? No. And that's kind of what hurts my head in going into, if we want to, quote, go into Venezuela, are you going to force regime change? And how are you going to win the hearts and minds? How are you going to make that turn where now everybody is going to go vote for Team X and kick Maduro out and realign an entire society in 6 months?
We do have a little bit more of an advantage in South America because about 80% of the population is predominantly Catholic and then Protestant, and we didn't have that advantage, you know, in the Middle East.
Yeah, good point. But how go back on that same statement? How many are willing to die for their religion? And I'm sorry, if you go down to, you know, the Methodist church, like, hey, we're all going to fight and die. Like, yeah, you know, Golden Corral's open. I was going to go get a buffet and feed my fat face and call that good and hopes and prayers. And we'll move on from there.
Well, so, we did see millions of, you know, Brazilians and these guys like to protest. And you see like 100,000, 200,000 people on the street while their election's getting stolen. If they just had that little bit of more wind in their sails, I think that they would, definitely support a revolution. You like the long-term consequences of that. What happens once you install an America-friendly dictator and then they get assassinated? You're back at square one. But, yep. You know...
years ago, we went into Panama and arrested Noriega. Why would you not do anything different here?
Well, I think we would, right? I mean, but I think the landscape's going to be a lot different this time. I think, you know, when you start looking at... because there's two places we have to consider. It's not just Venezuela, right? So there's you got cartels in Colombia and you got cartels in Venezuela. And for us to go in there and start taking out cartels, that's an existential threat to the other cartels, right? So they're going to put up a fight. They're not just going to go silently into the night.
Nope.
And I think Scott's right with we don't know how much shit the Russians and the Chinese have moved in there or are moving in there right now. So, and I'm sure DOD's got, or the Department of War has a lot better feel for, you know, what's going on the ground because they got better intel assets. But yeah, I'm with Scott on this one. What I keep coming back to is we had 250,000 boots on the ground in Iraq, 110,000, 105,000 US soldiers, and then the rest were contractors. And we basically couldn't hold a city block for very long. We'd move in, we'd secure the area, clean out the enemy, then we'd leave, they'd just come back. And, you know, Vietnam, way smaller country, and we had almost 1 million troops on the ground at one point. 550,000 was the minimum just in troops. And we were there 10 years, we still couldn't hold the ground. And so it's got to be done through either covert action or soft power and entice him to leave, which he's not going to leave with, you know, if he's got Russia and Chinese backing. So I'm curious to see how it's going to develop. I definitely think we'll see airstrikes in Caracas. I think we'll definitely see airstrikes in some of the other littoral cities. But, you know, they don't have a big military to begin with, and they don't have a lot of military assets in general. So I'm very curious to see how this will be prosecuted. I mean, I know he's wildly unpopular with the people, but, you know, that's not to say that they're going to just welcome us with open arms, right? Because they saw what happened in Iraq and Afghanistan, and I'm pretty sure they don't want a repeat of that.
No, and when your populace is armed with scissors and coat hangers, like, how are they going to fight against those that have guns?
That's true. I mean, I could see us arming a militia like we did with the warlords when we first went into Afghanistan. I could absolutely see us doing that. Absolutely. But then it becomes another question of how much and what can we ship them that we haven't already shipped to Ukraine and to Israel and to, you know, Afghanistan. If we were smart, we'd have taken all that shit out of Afghanistan and moved it down to Venezuela and just given it, you know, to militias down there. But then we're back to Iran-Contra. So there's a lot of ways this can play out.
I think the biggest challenge we face in Venezuela is that we don't want to lose all of South America. We don't want to turn every Hispanic, you know, Spanish-speaking person and Portuguese-speaking person in the South American continent against us. So the most important thing is how we do it and how we go around influencing Venezuela, not that we go in and dominate. Because I totally agree with you, Steve, and Scott, and Bracken, I've heard say the same thing, and I've heard the same thing from Bill Bupert also.
I'm on a call.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of different ways this can go. I do find it interesting though that they've stopped talking about peace in Ukraine. He stopped talking about a ceasefire. I mean, he's talking about a ceasefire, but you know he's not serious about it because he's not really pushing it, and they're not pushing the narrative. So it almost seems like these calls he's having with Putin are more along the lines of, here's what we're going to do next. We're going to go into Venezuela. We're going to influence the area, et cetera, et cetera. And I don't know, you guys can disagree with me, but it really does seem like there's a lot of posturing, and I don't see any kinetic activity down there for 3 to 4 months at least. I don't see it kicking off right. We just don't have the forces to do it.
In Venezuela, or did you switch from Russia? Russians are not going to accept a ceasefire because they knew going into the last couple that it was an opportunity for the Ukrainian forces to withdraw, regroup, and then refocus. And they're not going to let them play that game again. And remember the last ceasefire, what did Ukraine do? They launched a bunch of rockets at civilian targets inside Russia. So the Russian military industrial complex right now is performing optimally. They're not going to let the initiative, you know, lax. And so that's baked. I think that's why Trump's not trying to talk about it, unless the Europeans get involved and become active participants in that conflict. It's going to go anywhere. So, and I predicted it when the war started. They're going to take everything to the Dnieper and all the way to Odessa, and then they're going to maybe give a little bit back, and there'll be a couple of like DMZ shared control trade zones that will develop in Odessa and along the Dnieper, over time. But the land that you take in war is spoils of war. As far as Venezuela, we have a lot of opportunity to do economic development down there. We spent our money in China giving them our IP and building factories because you could hire a worker for like 5 cents an hour instead of 8 cents an hour in Venezuela. So what we have now is all these people rushing across into the United States, not to go seek new opportunity, but to escape poverty and look for handouts. And if we were building factories down there and we were paying, $1.50 an hour, right? We would have lower transport costs. The issue with South America, the main reason why big industry hasn't developed down there is because they do have some degree of environmental controls that is greater than the Asian countries. But we have to take this seriously. If we were building plants down there, anywhere in South America, those people would be coming to the United States to go to Disneyland, go on vacations, go sightseeing, renting RVs, traveling America, obeying the law, and then going back home. And it's an insult to a lot of the people in anywhere outside of the United States, to us Americans, to assume that they want to become U.S. citizens. They clearly don't. They want to come here. They want to, use the facilities, and then they want to, be able to come in and leave freely. So if we're offering that up on a silver platter to who are going to be essential allies in the region, if we go up against Venezuela and topple Brazil, we're going to have to shell out some money to do that. And I do think that there's enough of a groundswell of support to change in those nations that if we start promising that, that trade and, develop the economy and all that other stuff, that they're going to follow suit. And then, we're going to have to kill some fucking drug cartel guys and maybe a few dictators along the way. But they're prime. Somebody said it on the chat. The citizens of Venezuela are ripe for freedom and will embrace change. And I'm going to show this comment on the screen here. That's most of the countries in South America. And regardless of how we do it, if it's not well planned, if it's not pretty, if it takes longer than it should, I'm not going to say any war is a righteous war, but any application of military force that doesn't serve U.S. benefits or long-term interests is a waste of human life. And I do believe that in this situation, we're just going to have to figure it out, and we're going to have to engage the problem because it's not going to go away. And the Chinese and the Russians, especially the Chinese, are going to continue to march forward and take over politically and establish a military capability down there if we do not intervene. And they absolutely will use the cartels as proxy military forces if we don't get ahead of that, even if we're the ones arming the cartels and making them shoot in the other direction.
Well, truthfully, they're already arming the cartels anyways. It's like, where do you get all your fentanyl raw materials? They're coming from China, going to the cartels, yep. Then across.
Yeah, and I think an embargo on, or, not an embargo, that's not the word I'm looking for. It's not a cordon either.
Blockade.
Jeez, it was not coming to me. Yeah. A blockade like we did to Pigs, Japan. Too. What's that?
Bay of Pigs 2.0.
Yeah.
I hope that there's no 2.0 on that. That would be awful for us and them.
Yeah. I don't think so, though. I think there is a strategy. I don't know what the strategy is yet, but there is definitely a strategy there. And I think just the posturing we're seeing right now and the messaging we're seeing says that they're serious about doing something about it. And I want to go back to something that I don't know if it was Bill or that Raul said, but you know, if I was Trump and I knew that Smartmatic came out of Venezuela and I knew that Venezuela was heavily invested in Smartmatic up in Canada as well as Dominion, I'd have a burr in my ass too. And I would definitively be using the resources I have to make sure they can't steal another election in 28. And it's a race against time, and he knows it. And if you take the source out and you get all the information at the source, guess what? I can tell you where it's going to lead. It's all going to lead right back to the Clintons. It's going to lead back to Obama. It's going to lead back to probably a lot of people in the CIA. And it should, because that should be the next order of battle, is to go melt down the CIA and the intel establishment and get rid of every single one of the SESs that were put in place by Obama and Bush and replace them with people that understand selfless service and loyal to the Constitution. That's going to be the next fight. And, you know, he's fighting a six-front war right now. He's fighting the Europeans. He's fighting the Russians, the Chinese. He's fighting the drug cartels. He's fighting the media. He's fighting his own political party. And he's fighting the opposite, you know, establishment. So he's surrounded by, you know, vipers. And I understand some of the moves he's making, some of the moves I don't understand. You know, I listened to a long conversation, and I got to give credit where credit's due. This guy's a friend of mine, and he's a Q guy. And we agree to disagree. But he was doing a lecture on Q, and one of the things that we do agree on, and you know, the reason why I call him Q-tards, is that you have the part of that crowd that, you know, they're still trying to do decodes, and it's, you know, 7 years since the last post. But what one of the side effects, one of the unintended consequences that came out of that whole PSYOP, is that you have an entire swath of the population across the planet that has done the deep dive and added to, I can't think of what Wendy's last name is. Help me in here. Can't think of her name. Anyway, they've added to that body of work, and they've established relationships between all these organizations and all of the key players around the world, and the oligarchs, the old families, the old money families. And I think we're watching the demise of a lot of that infrastructure all at the same time. And, you know, I think the people around Trump are extremely smart. This time, I think he surrounded himself with some very, very smart people, because some of the moves I'm seeing now are very strategic, and it's things that, well, aren't going to benefit us right now, but it takes power away from the Europeans and puts power slowly in the lap of the U.S. And I think the powers that be, and I said this on the show last night, the powers that be have figured out that China is an existential threat to this country, but we can't take them on head to head. Because they're here, they're in Canada, they're in Mexico, they're all throughout Central and South America. They've infiltrated heavily across all of our continent and the Southern continent as well. So we can't fight them head to head right away. But I'm watching him make moves and set conditions so that we can fight them in the future. And I hate to say it, but I think that world war, not going to happen now, but I think eventually it will happen. And I think this is just the start of that. This whole Venezuela piece is the start of it. And I think taking down the cartels and taking down the intelligence apparatus that put that all in place, I think that's it's a necessary strategic step. I don't know. Call me crazy. You're the threat analyst, Drew.
Well, what I think we're going to do is we're going to deploy forces in Trinidad and Tobago, and we're going to use that as a quartering station. And so whatever else happens and how we do it, I'm putting that out there now. And we're going to see that happen. But you're right, with the Chinese, what do they have to offer? They do two things. And so when we did the threat assessment on Sri Lanka, it was the same thing. They owed China a lot of money. They lost their government, and China came to collect debt. The Indians didn't intervene, even though it's an existential threat to the southern India, you know, peninsula. But the way that the Chinese do business is they come in with their you know, open arms and open hands and open wallets, and they influence everybody. They start to develop relationships with the indigenous people. They support them. They do exactly what the left does as far as getting people in a local government and then taking advantage of government personnel that can be compromised. And all the while they're doing that, they're buying leases, they're buying land, they're buying companies, they're changing laws, they're doing things that embed them a lot deeper than just a kinetic threat type of enemy. They're embedding themselves in legally into the fabric of a lot of these places that we have to regain control over. So like you said, we could take them head on, but how's that going to look in the international court perspective? So what is going on in Venezuela? And we did the same thing with rubber factories and oil wells and everything else. And then what happened, that the communist governments in South America just nationalized everything and took it over. So I don't think that we're going down a path where we can't punch through and have it, inculcate a new way of thinking with whatever puppet government that we establish. But you can't do anything, not necessarily without military force, but without the capability of a military threat. And so when you combine the military threat and the capability, the fact that this summertime all year round in South America, so, our ability to plan militarily for how we're going to engage a threat is going to be a lot more beneficial to us, or a lot less dynamic than it would be fighting in a region where the seasons change and your capabilities have to change and your logistics have to change and everything else changes. But we're going to have to stack up military capability. We're going to do it in the friendly countries. I think we're going to work our trade partners that are in the area that would really just love U.S. currency and U.S. U.S. support. We're going to be utilizing their militaries, and the cartels and mercenaries, they'll shoot a gun in either direction. They don't care. Whoever they work for, they'll kill this guy, they'll kill that guy, they'll kill whoever the lowest bidder is. So I'm not really worried about influencing and controlling the FARC rebels. I'm only worried about who shows up first with a briefcase full of $100 bills. But we're definitely going to have operatives in the area, and we're definitely going to be stacking up military in the area. And I think the Trinidad is exactly where we're going to start doing that. And then other places, right? But we can still park, and we can still adjacently park naval ships, but we're going to have to land resources and capabilities somewhere. And so my bet, it's going to be Trinidad and Tobago and French Guiana, which really isn't an ideal place to go. But we have plenty of landing places, and we have plenty of time to stack up forces, because even the Russians and the China know that if we start bringing cargo ships full of military equipment, into the region and stacking it up in these non-hostile areas and other countries, they're not going to be able to attack or engage that. They're only going to be able to observe that buildup. And then they're going to be at a choice point there. Do they move a Navy in and then escalate the conflict? Do they, anything that they try to move in there now is going to be detected. So they're going to be leveraging their local governments that they've already been influencing for years and years. We're going to have our guys do the same thing. And like I said, you're dealing with a predominantly Catholic Protestant group of people who have been suffering under totalitarian leadership for decades. And they see the changes that happened in Argentina. They see the changes that have happened with the Trump administration. And they've seen the neglect under the Biden administration. And they've seen the effect of these cartels. And they've seen the effect. They can be very easily educated on the effect that the Chinese have had in the African countries where they came in open arm, open wallet, and then all of a sudden shit changed. And then people found out they were living under a proxy dictatorship. So I do think we have a lot of capability to leverage and influence and establish an indigenous military force that's going to counter the people that are on the ground now. We have the ability to build up military capability. It's not that far away from, CONUS, and the Chinese and the Russians either have to declare war on us, or they have to allow us to move all of our big chess pieces in the middle of the board and just take the situation over. That's the only two ways it can go, hopefully with a minimum amount of bullets fired. But this isn't some far off fucking logistical nightmare place that we're fighting. This is, this is just to the south of us. So I think we'll be successful.
Troop, think that what we've got to do, and it's interesting that you want to pre-position things and you want to give the world time to watch us maneuver all of our chess pieces. I built a 3-division airborne drop plan for Syria using every frickin' asset that we had, to include airborne Marines, the brigade in up in Alaska, and everybody else. Any jump, any airborne possible element that you could put in an aircraft and get to where you needed to. And it's a much shorter distance to get there. We could rotate a lot faster. You do your initial strikes against all the ADA assets with the new long-range precision fire systems that the Army would just love to test out. And you bring in, you know, all of your experienced old wild weasel guys to mop up the loose ends. You strike at the C2 nodes, you drop the 3 divisions, and within 24 hours, you've taken everything and you've killed every cartel node out there, so that there is only one choice left, and that is Maduro walks out the door and gets in, you know, his little Gulfstream and leaves. And you let that happen. But it's got to be fast. It's got to be furious. It's got to be freaking everything. You bring in all your ships. You bring in your Marines. You bring in freaking everything, because it's all right here. You just do it. And then what you do is you clean it all up. You set things back in motion. And then you pull everything out. We're done in 2 weeks, kind of like the 100 hours of Desert Storm. And you tell the world, we're not going to put up with this shit anymore. And we go home. And everybody goes, holy fuck.
I'm waiting for the air guy to talk. And we got a sub guy here too. So you two don't get to sit back and
bring in the freaking T-Lambs. Bring in freaking everything. We're talking about, you know, the most destructive joint operation of every single munition we have
left,
you know, and you know, if we expend all this stuff and have to replace it, the military industrial complex is going to support that operation. They get to rearm and refill us.
There is a higher density of collateral damage though with a blitzkrieg type of maneuver in, you know, in this region of the world. So I'm not saying, you know, that's great. I like the Norman Schwarzkopf go kick ass, but even with that 100-day war, there was, you know, like almost a whole year of pre-placement. So we're a lot closer, but I don't know,
but the pre-placement is because we had to bring freaking, you know, 2 corps from Germany through Hungary. Here we throw them on the railroads, right? So all the heavy stuff comes in on the railroads. All the airborne stuff comes in, you know, overnight. But I'm thinking just heavy cav ops, right? Just everything. Frickin', if you're going to commit, you commit. Everything goes. Everything. Maybe
that's what we're going to do. But I want to give Spud and Scott a chance to respond to this. And Bill, I know you got an opinion on this too, because you're a logistics guy, you know. And there's a lot more to that, right? So why don't you guys take it away? Somebody say some of that plane and sub shit, man.
Yeah, well, okay. I was listening to the whole airdrop discussion, and since I did do airdrop, I do think that, you know, we've already seen it work well in Panama and work sort of well in Grenada. And I do think that if you were going to do it, the way Ralph's saying it is the only way that would work, in my opinion. There's still plenty of pitfalls, but if you're going to do it, you do the way Ralph said. I agree.
Let me take you back to Iraq 2.0. Sorry about using the 2.0 too often, but we have everything planned out. We had already mapped out the 65 different surface-to-air weapon systems in what we called the Super Mez in and around Baghdad. and they come in with the attempted decapitation strike, and they all scatter to the four winds. So now everything that we have mapped out that we knew where it was, now it's everything's a threat, because now we have SA6s, SA2s, 3s, 11. It just, everything is now just scattered to the four winds. And so now we're going in blind, getting lit up on every single sector when they let us go in, you know, the week later, and it's a mess. So sometimes it's great if you come in with overwhelming force, but you got to do it. You can't like stick a toe in the water. Oop, tub's too hot. Not going to go there. You need to jump in with both feet. And that's the one thing we didn't do with Iraq, was if we're going to go, let's go, but not this, oh, well, we're going to pinprick and knock out some of the leadership and call it good, because it just, it created a hornet's nest of bad second, third, and fourth order effects that we had to deal with over the next 2 to 3 weeks. And when I'm over Baghdad and I have 35 SA-2 missiles shot at me in the span of 20 minutes, it didn't make me really happy, but I'm still happy to be here. But it'll kind of change your mind when you got a 2,000-pound warhead 60 feet away from your head and it doesn't go off. So it's one where if you're going to go, you need to get it all, but you're never going to get it all. That's kind of what my thought is on that whole standpoint of, yeah, we'll just get it all done in one fell swoop. It's never that easy. There's always mess. There's always cleanup. And there's always unexpected consequences from kicking the door in, because you don't know who's directly behind that door.
100%.
Oh, I agree with that. But I go back to my original premise, and that is, you just, if you're going to commit, commit. Every uniformed person is in the fight. Every drone, every UAV, every submarine, every Tomahawk in the in inventory, it's all going. Everything's going. Every airborne person is dropping. Every Ro-Ro is pulling up on a beach. Everything is going.
Only one we haven't heard from is Spud. Sub guy, say some sub shit.
Well, I mean, Desert Storm, I was in that period, and yeah, I'd say our effectiveness was the Tomahawk launches that we sent over there in mass. And of course it set the groundwork for you know, the Army and the Marines to move forward. But yeah, I mean, adding the support off the coast that way, yeah, it would be truly effective. And I agree with Raul, if we're going to do it, we go full bore. But then, you know, I'm also seeing, you know, going back to what Troop was saying about the Argentina and the money that Trump's looking to push that way, the $40 billion supposedly to bring in beef into the United States, you know, could be, and I didn't think of it from this angle, one of those things to set the stage to, you know, build that friendly atmosphere to get us in there. Now it's pissed off all the ranchers to beyond belief, because we have enough. We or they have a big enough problem as it is trying to get the beef prices down, which is it's extraordinarily through the roof. If anybody's following it, it's insane. In fact, it's gotten so bad that even the beef ranchers are saying if they don't control this, the corporatists are going to take it over, because, you know, the small ranchers are going to lose every bit of their inventory down to the calves. Because right now, yesterday, they were selling them for $50 a calf, and they're getting almost $1,500 a calf. And so, but yeah, I mean, I can, to agree with Troop, what he was saying in regards to getting the surrounding areas to join hands, that would make perfect sense, at least from a strategic standpoint, which is, you know, I'm glad you brought that up. But, you know, us submariners, we can definitely provide whatever's needed at whatever variant that you want. Interestingly enough, I saw a video of a gentleman talking about the Tomahawks. I don't know if it was Bracken or somebody, but he made a good point. And that was, you know, we put our Tomahawks in that direction. And if the particular country has any means to push back. You know, there's multivariants of that one missile. You know, it can be potentially, you know, nuclear capable, you know, just, I mean, you name it. There's dozens of different variants that can be pushed, and it could, you know, raise the threat level even higher, especially, you know, if we sent them to Ukraine. A good point was made, you know, if they were launched at Russia, they're going to think the worst up front. Is it going to be a potential, you know, nuclear capable missile? And then what would that produce?
Yeah, you don't know. When you see it, you know, I talked about the show last night, right? A TLAM coming at you, you don't know if it's nuclear, biological, or chemical, so you have to assume it is and then respond accordingly, right? So, yeah. Where are we at here?
Well, I guess that's why I want to go full conventional, because I don't want any idiot, being an old nuke guy, I don't want any of the senior leadership to think that any nuke, any tactical is permitted. That's the wrong avenue, period. Again, why you hammer with everything you've got that's conventional, but just keep the nukes off the table.
But the problem being is that with the Tomahawk, you don't know if it's a nuke by bio or chem going through. So now fast forward this to a Ukraine scenario, and you throw a Tomahawk towards Moscow, what's Putin going to think? It kind of changes the landscape of, okay, it's the big unknown.
Well, so, yeah, I agree with that. But that's...
Here comes the myth.
I'm looking at that's a different theater with different operating environment, different threats, different tactics. I'm talking about Venezuela. It's a totally different ball of wax.
But if they're backed by Russia and China, is it really?
Well, I guess that's where we need serious intel. How much are they backed by Russia and China? Are they backed by Russia and China where they're willing to cross the big waters to come over and help? That's a hell of a commitment. That's where we always make the mistake.
Well, I got a lot of thoughts about this one. I think we've all said it in a certain way, right? We don't know the disposition of forces that are already there from both Russia and China. China doesn't have the logistics to do it, and neither does Russia. They don't have they don't have the logistics to rush in troops. So their strategy has been for a long time to pre-position, right? Look at China building the islands in the Philippine Sea. Right? It's all about pre-positioning. So that's what I would be curious to see. What they've already pre-positioned and what they've already given the Venezuelans since all of this started. Because, you know, we're watching their logistics. We're watching the ports. We're watching the ships coming in. I'm sure that we're watching aircraft coming in, especially military aircraft. So we probably got a pretty good idea of what's been moving in and out of there, at least in the last 3 to 4 months. But we don't know what was put there before. And I think that's it's a big question mark, but I really don't think that we'll see them move in a lot of forces. Russia's decisively engaged in Ukraine. They're not going to exfiltrate themselves out of that and refocus on Venezuela. China's decisively engaged everywhere, so I'd be curious to see what forces they would commit to it. I do know they have tons and tons and tons of military-age males throughout Central and South America. So they could probably muster forces, but then again, it comes down to logistics. It's a one-trick pony. So I'd be curious to see how that would play out. But again, I'm basing that on the assumption that they have things pre-positioned, just like they have stuff pre-positioned here. And I know they have stuff pre-positioned here. So take that for what it is. We're coming up on an hour and a half. It's probably a good time to wrap this up. Any final thoughts on this before I wrap this up? Because I know everybody's got an opinion, that's for sure.
Silver's only dip by the dip.
Scott, you first, then Bill.
The one thing that occurred, what's that?
Scott first.
I was going to say, I think. Okay.
Silver's only a dip. They're going to do everything they can to beat it down. It's still a great buy at 48, 45, back up to 50. It's I think we're not going to stop till it's 500 plus.
Bruce?
I was going to talk about Venezuela. I think that the only way I could see working with Venezuela is we've got to have a huge scale propaganda war to mobilize the Venezuelan citizens to be ready to join us if we did anything. So if we did what Ral's talking about and had also had a huge, you know, leaflet, every other kind of propaganda campaign saying, you want your freedom, you want your country back, you have to rally and help our forces take your country back. And it would be a big gamble because it could easily turn into a Vietnam kind of situation if we didn't do it right. That's all I got on that.
True.
We have a massive amount of buying power and they have a massive amount of stuff that they want to sell us. And in the end, their citizens are just like our citizens. They want to go home and Netflix and chill. So they're going to see a faster path forward with the United States influence and capitalist based opportunity being sold to them and, you know, and the right messaging than they are forever being slaves of, you know, communist controlled foreign Chinese industry and living under dictatorships. They at some point when people see that they have a path forward where they can truly have a degree of independence or a degree of you know, economic and social elevation, and they see the consequences of the conflict in the region going either way, I think it's gonna be in our favor. That we're gonna have a lot of support down there, and it won't take 20 years.
Spud?
On a humor note, I don't think we have to worry too much about their Navy. 7 days ago, they almost sank one of their LSTs in the big exercise that they were trying to show up against the U.S. Navy. But, can the submarines provide the support? Sure, they can do it in very various different levels. They can carpet bomb the place, bring in all the, you know, air support, just like Scott was saying. You know, from a vertical launch standpoint, you know, we are limited to what we can throw out that way. But fortunately for us, we can go big time or small time with it. It'd be interesting to see. And I haven't seen any articles. I've been looking. Of course, we're not going to know, or we shouldn't know, you know, how many boats are stationed out there at this time anyways. But going back to the silver, I thought it was interesting when it was peaking up as high as above $55. In some of the rural areas, there was a lot of robberies out here at the, you know, your antique shops that normally keep these 1 ounce rounds in glass cases and such. In my area, they had three that were broken into and all their silver was stripped. So, and of course, you know, I don't keep up with gold and silver very much. I learn a lot from the guys on the round table, but, you know, out here, there's a lot of people that are seeking, like we were saying earlier, the more physical nature, having it in their hand. And unfortunately, they can't keep up with the demand and everything's being shut down.
Yep. Ral?
I've been thinking about what Troop says about signaling. I don't think we should pre-position. The problem that we really are going to have is, number one, making sure the CIA doesn't do stupid shit, which they like to do. And number two, is the State Department going to be able to do what needs to be done? If we start mobilizing and we send the strategic messaging and do the IO campaign, letting everybody know we have the potential, we have the desire, but you can stop this, maybe that's the right way to go and keep my plan as a backup. But every unit is alerted, every unit is mobilized, every ship is put to sea, every aircraft is pre-positioned, so that the whole world looks at it and goes, these guys aren't talking BS. And as for silver, I recommend everybody there, you can get their little silver sheets. They run about $300 a piece, maybe 400. I actually just bought another one a couple of days ago. They are 100 pieces that are together that if you break it apart, instead of having, you know, a $47 coin, it's a $4 piece that you can use for bartering. And they're small. They're really good silver coming out of Switzerland. And you can pick them up on the market pretty decent. And just stack it away and have it ready for a rainy day. That's what I'm doing. I got a lot of them. Because I buy them pretty regularly.
If you have a link, man, shoot me the link and I'll put it in the show notes so people can go out and buy their own.
We'll go.
So, okay. I think that's a good place to wrap it up. Appreciate all the input tonight, folks. Good stuff. I'll be back on Tuesday with a sit rep. Until then, God bless everyone. One team, one fight.
Hooah.
Hooah.
Hooah.